This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. So glad you're joining us. This is the host, Tim Link, of course. And we got the wonderful Dr. Kevin Lynch coming on the show. Kevin has written the latest book, Off the Leash, Tales from a Lifetime of Healing Pets and Wonder. So we're going to talk to Dr. Lynch a little bit about the book and some of the stories. And obviously, 50 years of practice in veterinary medicine and care. So we're going to talk to him about that. And then, of course, we'll pick his brain about writing the book, how super duper easy it was to go through 50 years of stories and pick a handful of them for us to read. So I'm sure it was really easy to do. Sarcasm attached, of course.
Pun intended.
That's it.
Thank you, Tim, for having me on. It's wonderful to be with you, and I'm looking forward to the adventure.
Absolutely. Well, we'll come back right after this commercial break, and we'll talk a little bit more with, or more detail with Dr. Kevin Lynch for the book Off the Leash. So everybody hang tight. We'll come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Joining me now is a veterinarian superstar, 50 years plus, and obviously the author of the latest book, Off the Leash, Tales from a Lifetime of Healing Pets in Wonder. Of course, we're talking to Dr. Kevin Lynch. Dr. Lynch, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you for having me. Not so much a superstar, maybe one of the lesser saints, but I'm not too sure about that either. But 50 years, you know, you get some mantle of sophistication, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a big kudos to you. Thanks for helping out so many different animals and taking care of all of our beautiful creatures.
My privilege. Yeah.
So the book. So I'm sure you just had an epiphany one day saying, hey, I need to take 50 years of lifetime in veterinarian care and write a few stories down. The book's called Off the Leash. Tell us a little bit about the book and how it came about.
You know, it's a journey for many veterinarians that you recall things that are significant in your practice life. The poignant episodes, the sad episodes, the incredibly funny episodes, the things that make you scratch your head. But for myself, it was a reflection of an awareness that all of these stories have a common thread. And that common thread is the animal bond. The bond for myself personally not only forms with animals, but with the families that I'm graced with coming through my doors with their pets. And that's a really powerful notion in my mind. And my practice has evolved to always have that sentiment of trust and that sentiment of bonding to both ends of the leash. Like I say in the book, there's love at both ends of the leash. And I don't know if every veterinarian shares that, but I like to think that they do. For me, it's super important to have that bond exist, nurture it, so that when I see a pet at 6 weeks of age and I'll see them at 17, 18 years of age, I've been part of that journey with them. And that's so, so important in my life as a veterinarian.
And, you know, and that's powerful, too. And I love how you said that, because it's absolutely true, because through the hardships, the heartaches, and all the beautiful things that go along with it, you know, you're dealing with the energies of both the animal and the human companion.
Absolutely.
And, that's a juggling act.
And it's, you know, you're not trained when you go to vet school. You're in the, I like to say, you come out knowing a little bit about parts and service. You know the anatomy, you know the drug therapy, you know what you should do to get an x-ray generated, and your rudimentary skills in surgery that develop well after you get your diploma. But the psychology of practicing and nurturing animals and interacting with people, with kids, with parents, It's its own science. Many times, and I've said this in the book as well, many times an answer will come out of a part of the room where a little kid sits, a 4 or 5 year old kid that says, yeah, mommy, he chewed that doll leg 2 weeks ago, you know? And you develop a radar for interaction, and it's so important to get that right. I wish they had emphasized more of this, and I think it's working its way into coursework in veterinary medicine, but training people to be aware of senses and innuendo and things that are half said. It's important to embellish diagnostic capability, incredibly important to be an asker of questions. When I'm examining an animal, I'm examining that animal, asking it questions with my hands, with my sense of smell and hearing, but I'm also engaged in a conversation with the owner. Those two conversations are simultaneous, and you've really got to be careful to pick up bits and pieces from each of them that'll help you ultimately help the animal. And not an easy art, and it develops over a period of time. I think a big dose of empathy and a big dose of compassion is so much part of that capability. I wish they taught that in vet school. I wish I had that the day I left Cornell with my diploma, because it's a real insight into how to deal with veterinary medicine.
Yeah, absolutely. And how things have changed over the years, you know, not only from the veterinarian, the science side of things, you know, things that were not available in the 20s and 40s or even into the early 2000s are now available from us.
Absolutely.
From a science standpoint. But the compassion, like you had mentioned, how we treat our animals. You know, in the early days, we worked on the farms and our animals were a utility, you know, something that we kept healthy long enough to help us do our job and make put bread on the table, to now they're our children, you know.
They're our family members. And you're absolutely correct, Tim. You know, the evolution of who they are in our life has just been an amazing thing for me to witness. From the time I knocked on a veterinarian's door when I was 13 and said, I'd like to work here. You don't have to pay me because I want to be a veterinarian. You don't owe me anything. And the guy was grasping his stethoscope in one hand, laughed a little bit and said, come in here. We'll see about that. And he gave me the privilege of being that kid that hung around for 6 months before I was even offered any kind of true work in the hospital. But my God, there have been people in my life that have just always seemed to be there at the right moment. And it's almost as if it was the pre-planning of it all was something so, so important. But the bond between pets, their owners, and myself, that's the core of what I do. Like we like to say on the YouTube channel I have called The Pet Mindset, we empower pet parents to protect the bond. And it's that bond that's evolved over time as well. They have become more and more significant in people's lives. It also demands that people are the best pet parents they can be, because as medicine has gotten more and more sophisticated, it's gotten more and more expensive to have a pet. So that notion of prevention, that notion of protection, of daily awareness of where your pet is, as you would any child in the family, is paramountly important. It's just become more evident to me. And that's what the book is about. The book is about protecting that bond. And the stories, sure, they have entertainment value. They're interesting. But the main message is protect the bond.
I love it. I love that. I fully believe in that. And I fully believe that every day that bond grows, and you have to help it grow, help it nurture, and have a great lifetime with your pet. So I agree with that wholeheartedly. So the stories in Off the Leash, obviously, is your history, your lifetime that's still cooking along pretty good. Tell us about how you sort through that, because I can imagine when I first put my first book out, Wagging Tails, it was right when I started working, you know, full time with animals, and it wasn't easy, but it was a process where, okay, I had a nice collection of stories. I could put it into a book. But you've got a huge collection, and a huge collection that's up here in your mind and in your heart. How do you weed through that to determine, okay, to get this message across about building that bond and that lifetime bond, which messages or which stories are going to get that message pushed through?
I wish I could say there was an absolute science to it. You know, when you start thinking about something of this sort, the message has to follow a chronologue. That was the simple way for my mind to do it, beginning with my experience as a very young child, finding my first dead animal and being so upset that the loss of a sparrow, a small sparrow that I ran in my cupped hands up three flights of steps in an apartment building in Brooklyn and asked my mom to make alive again. And she shook her head and held me in that motherly embrace that only moms can give their kids and said, "Kevin, he's gone." And it not only was the loss of that animal, but it was the everything around us seemed to be diminished. There was just a reduction in the world for me that this life was no longer going to be part of the landscape. And that started the journey when that's the very first story in the book. And I have to think chronologically to organize my thoughts. It's funny you should say it, well, buzzing up in your head, because there are stories that are not in a book that maybe a sequel will be down the line for me.
There you go.
I certainly think along the lines of how the core message of who these animals are in our lives and why was this so important for me as a young man to become a veterinarian, to protect life. And my whole journey has been that same notion that these are valuable creatures and they're important. And I think the world needs a heavy dose of that type of compassion for things that are valuable because they just are in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a good message across the board, especially with our animals. So,
especially today.
Yeah. Well, I applaud you for that. You know, most kids will either A, say they want to be a professional baseball player when they're me, and then I realize I don't have nearly enough talent. I did okay, but not that great. But, I hear time and time again youngsters that want to be veterinarians, but they get discouraged because there's these things. It's hard work. You have to study. You have to learn the science behind it. And even more so, you have to have, I think, people around you that are compassionate, as the theme goes, to help you along.
Without a doubt. And, the two people I work with every day, two veterinarians, came to me, and that's why I never forgot my own experience as a young man. They came to me in the 10th grade and volunteered, shadowed me for a couple of days. And both of them, I work with them every day of the week. They're there, and they're veterinarians. They share, in their hearts and minds, they share that same place where compassion and being a good steward of the animal community is so, so important. And, good business entails being mindful of so many things, but one of the real tenets of a good business is to be that caretaker in what I do. And if you can have a young veterinarian accomplish that type of mindset early in their career, they can be a superstar. I'm still a journeyman. I'm still learning. That's what I call a practice, right?
That's it.
I'm still in the learning phase, but that sense of compassion is so, so important.
Right. And I think it's fantastic. You surround yourself with very talented people and very compassionate people, and you identified that early on. And I could see that you nurtured them along.
I'm blessed with that. And that's why I say, these steps almost seem to be sometimes planned out in a way that, and I don't want to wear too much on my sleeve of my own personal beliefs, but it's just been an incredible journey. I've always been, as a kid, I was a very geeky kid. I was always interested in how things work. I surround myself with machinery today that's just state of the art. The other day, I took a rug out with an endoscope on a dog, pieces of chewed up rugging that would have had in anybody else's hands necessitated opening the dog up surgically. And I sent the dog home in 3 hours rather than 3 days. That's a win. That's incredible benefit of the technology today. I love to do my majority of my work with the ultrasound machine. It's a modality that was never there years ago. We had x-rays that were all well and good, but now I can look inside an organ and see what its function is about. I do laser surgery. It's like Star Wars. I can take out a tumor without bleeding, pain, swelling. And, I even wear the Obi-Wan Kenobi hood. No, I don't.
You should.
That's talking about the sophistication of veterinary medicine today versus years ago that you alluded to. It's wonderful. But if I can prevent those problems from happening by educating people, by making them take notice early on in the disease process, that's a real win. That's a real win. And that's what my mind and heart are about.
Absolutely. I love it. I love it. Yeah, we were just speaking last night. I've got a toy schnauzer who's going to be 14 this year. And when we had her as a puppy, she tried climbing up these stairs and one of the legs missed and fractured her knee. Now, she recovered brilliantly. We had a great surgeon and everything was good. And she's good as new today. But even things that I learned through that I didn't know through having other animals in my lifetime, things like cold laser therapy after surgery for healing purposes.
Therapy lasers, wonderful tool. They do amazing things. There's light therapy today. We do PRP, platelet-rich plasma therapy in practice. I do infuse stem cells derived from body fat, abdominal fat. We take 40 grams of abdominal fat, turn it into millions of stem cells, put it back into the patient as a graft of self, and it does no harm that they don't react to it because it's their own cells. And you see these miracles of arthritic improvement, allergy reduction, other things that are not even associated with the intent that you put it in get better. Reduction in the amount of insulin an animal gets because the pancreas is functioning. It's remarkable today. And the sophistication of veterinary medicine is on a par with human medicine. But I like to believe that prevention is still the mainstay of keeping animals well.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. I agree with that wholeheartedly. I was told a friend the other day, it's like you, I always use the terminology, you pay for it now or pay for it later. You
know, and, that's life. Yeah.
That's very true. You know, keep it maintained and it's going to last a lot longer and you're not going to have to pay as much in the end. So I like it. I like that for sure. We're going to come to a commercial break real quick. We'll come back and chat a little bit further with Dr. Kevin Lynch and talk to him about his book, Off the Leash, Tales from a Lifetime of Healing Pets and Wonder. So everybody hang tight. We'll be back after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Real people, real stories.
Our little dog developed this lymph problem, but the chemotherapy lasted for 6 months, started developing more lymph nodes. So I thought I'd just try carnivore. The lymph nodes started to go down. Then I took him into the vet to have him checked out, and there was no signs at all inside.
My cat had issues that developed in his eye, and 3 months later, my veterinarian said, let's go ahead and remove the eye. I heard the carnivore advertising. So I said, you know what? I'm going to order this product. They did the procedure. They did all the tests, and they said, I don't know what you did. This product saved his eye.
I've got a Labrador. He could hardly lift herself up off the floor. The treatment was chemotherapy. That's when I said, this could be the ticket. About 3 weeks, you could tell she was very alert. She was going on 5 mile walk. She is just like prime again.
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.com. That's carnivora.com.
Use promo code PETLIFE at checkout for 15% off your order at carnivora.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Continue our conversation with author and Dr. Kevin Lynch, veterinarian practice 50 years in service and all the wonderful things that he's learned throughout the years. And he's put all the best stories, or at least phase one of the best stories, in the book Off the Leash. Now, Dr. Lynch, we talked a lot about veterinary medicine and what it takes today. One thing that popped in my mind, for good or bad, my dogs in particular, cats have been included in this too, but dogs in particular, we have had a series of specialists. Everything from neurological to skeletal to GI tract to you name it. We have our main general practitioner. Early on, we had a vet that just did the shots because he was right around the corner. He's really good, but he was right around the corner. So we had this whole host of veterinarians, and they were all fantastic in their own right. But they also had their own personalities, their own way of going about doing that, and their own way of having compassion, as we talked about. Or maybe not as great of compassion. How would you say a novice, a first-time pet owner, or one that is having some challenges with their animals, how do they sort through all that? How do they know, okay, what is the best specialist to go to, and when should I do that compared to what my general practitioner can do?
You know, you just described the whole evolution of veterinary medicine quite aptly. I always tell people, if you're going to get a pet, and I've spoken to people not in my immediate area, but well out of the area, or former clients who move out of state, I think the best thing to do is word of mouth in the neighborhood. Who's got that quality? Who understands you? Who seems to listen the best? Many veterinarians are trained on a level today that is just excellent. Veterinary colleges are so adaptive to producing a great product at the end. But I still always tell people, if you're going to get a pet, if I have the privilege of seeing you myself, I'm going to be every bit as much Dr. Lynch as I can. But talk to people in your neighborhood first and see who's doing the most credible job. And you'll get it's almost like taking a poll. And I don't think that's unfair. I think that's very wise, because there's more to medicine than just an injection or a scalpel blade or a pill off the shelf. There's a lot of intuition. There's a lot of listening. And people that have that talent, I think, are more adept at the craft and more adept veterinarians. The instance of going to specialists, that is something today that we live with and that was never available years ago. In my own practice life, the first few years, I can remember getting up in the middle of the night and doing a cesarean section with nothing more than the owner's help and delivering puppies and getting them into the world, because there were no specialty clinics around or emergency clinics around. The area was just so isolated on the eastern end of Long Island. The nearest center for veterinary medicine was the Animal Medical Center in New York City, 65 miles away. Many times people couldn't even make that journey. So I kind of bit my teeth on the raw end of veterinary medicine in those days, but today it's a whole different world. There are specialties for everything, and God bless it that these people are good at what they do. I'm a forever student. When I speak to a specialist, I'm going to talk about that case, but if I could get another minute and a half out of them on something else that I need to know, you bet I'm going to ask a question. And it's remarkable how people love to be teachers at every level, designed so as humans, but these specialists are just so gracious in imparting knowledge, even when the case is not something that they're addressing that I might have referred them to.
I wouldn't call it a struggle for my thought pattern, but it seems like as the years have gone by, and as we said, more and more specialists have gotten into play, and this is for human medicine as well, but in veterinarian care in particular, everybody seems to be focused on specialty, more so maybe even than general care. But trying to find that right person and how to sort through all that, that is, it's a lot like sorting through animal nutrition. Yeah. You know,
you want to get really confused. Go down the road today. You know, kibble's bad. This is good. Make him homemade diets. No, don't do that. Don't add fats. You're adding too much fat. It's confusing for us. You know, one of the areas I will say to you that really has become important in my life insofar as prevention is dental care for animals. And because of that, I actually was so frustrated with seeing repetitive animals coming in with severe dental disease over the years. I actually, it was the intent to solve a problem, not invent a product, but I invented a product called a plaque begone device, which is a microfiber system to remove plaque from teeth before it hardens into tartar, pain-free, very good at what it does, fear-free for the animal. But the reason why I bring that up is that's, to me, a step ahead of having to refer an animal to a specialist for severe advanced periodontal disease, or even having an animal that necessitates anesthesia to have teeth pulled when teeth cleaned. If we can produce a system and a daily cleaning and a daily awareness of oral health, you better believe people are looking at everything else down the line. I call dental disease the tip of the iceberg, medical iceberg, but so many other organs are targets because of dental disease. But when you're examining a pet's mouth, dog, cat, you're also looking at the rest of their body. You're looking for changes, and it's those changes that can represent illness in some cases. It's amazing. I get people in the office. I happen to be looking in his mouth, Doc, and I felt this lump in his neck. Or he was whining on the back leg when I steadied him to look at his mouth to see what his teeth were about. Teaching people that awareness, and this is also in the book, the home health exam, that I describe in the book. How does an owner do a home health exam, not to train them as veterinarians, but to make them the better pet parent by inculcating awareness of where that pet's body is? That's so important. And that we talk about specialists. We talk about the incredible sophistication of medicine. If we can bring it back, dial it back down to a simple examination of your animal at home, you can oftentimes avoid very difficult problems.
Nice. I love it. I love it. Quick exam. Spend more time with your animal.
Yeah.
That's what I say.
And,
yeah.
And you know, petting them's all well and good, but look at their body like you would a child. That's important. That's fulfilling that circle of them being family members. Okay, we're going to look at you on a daily basis as if, you know, we're examining the troops. We're going to send you off into the yard, into your world, knowing that everything is working. There's no pain in your ears. There's no discharge in your eyes. Your skin and hair coat are fine. There's no swellings that weren't there yesterday. You're not whimpering because I touched you in a way that I've done 1,000 times before, but it's producing pain. All of that is an awareness factor. And to me, that's so important to teach people right from the get-go. When that puppy or kitten is 6 or 8 weeks of age, they've got to start looking. They've got to start becoming aware of who these other family members are.
Love it. I love it. Good message. Well, Dr. Lynch, where can people find out more about you and the book Off the Leash and learn as much as they can?
We have the two answers there. The Pet Mindset channel on YouTube is a discussion forum for a lot of people in the world, and I love doing it. Also, you can find out about the book or the dental device at drkevinlynch.com. And we just try to do things that are helpful for families. And hopefully that's the message I'm bringing to the table.
Absolutely. We're doing a great job. We'll definitely get those avenues posted so people can continue to learn and continue to build that great bond with their animals.
Thank you for that.
Everybody, make sure you pick up a copy of the book, Off the Leash, Tales from a Lifetime of Healing Pets and Wonder by Dr. Kevin Lynch. So thanks for coming on the show today. We appreciate it. Learned a lot, as always. The stories are fantastic and always continuing to learn, right?
This has been a total privilege and a pleasure, and I thank you very much.
My pleasure. Well, we're coming into the show today. I want to thank everyone for listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. I want to thank the producers and sponsors for making this show possible. If you have any questions, comments, ideas for the show, drop us a line. You can go to PetLifeRadio.com. We'll be glad to answer your questions, entertain your comments, and bring on the people you want to hear from most. And while you're there, check out all the other wonderful shows at PetLifeRadio.com. So until next time, write a great story about the animals in your life, and who knows, you may be the next guest on Animal Rights, Pet Life Radio. Have a great day.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.